We'd like to take a moment to talk about Jane, one of our sponsors who helped make this episode possible. Jane is a practice management software built for every kind of mental health practitioner and is thoughtfully designed with your clients in mind. Jane makes it convenient to meet with individuals, couples, or families, whether that's online, via Jane's telehealth options, or in person.
From day one, you can expect unlimited customer support through onboarding that sets you up for success and a 99.99% software reliability that ensures that Jane is always ready to start the day with you.
Just as you are always learning and improving, Jane is too. The team at Jane values customer feedback and uses it to design even more helpful features. So you can think of Jane as a software that grows with you.
If you're curious to see Jane in action, head to jane.app/mentalhealth/US to book a free one-on-one demo. You can also mention the code DCPOD at sign up for a 2-month free grace period on your new Jane account.
I'm really excited and slightly anxious to announce that my book, The Autistic Burnout Workbook, is releasing this next week. It comes out March 11th. It's available for pre-order right now. I am trying to avoid falling back into burnout. When you release a book, there is a lot of pressure to do promotion and to market and to get the word out there. So this is my burnout prevention form of marketing. I'm running a special right now for those who are supporting my work through pre-ordering. You can submit that information after you pre-order, and we will get you a coupon code that you can use toward our store for the same amount. So the workbook costs $18.99. So then you'd get $18.99 to use in our digital shop or in our Etsy shop, which would get you another digital workbook for free. So you buy one workbook and then you get a digital one for free. That is the promotion I'm running. It's technically a pre-order promotion, but I've been a bit behind on getting the word out. So for listeners of the podcast, I'm going to extend that. If you buy the book in the next month, you can go ahead and redeem the special. The link for that is in the notes below. Thank you so much for supporting my work. It means so much to me, and I just really appreciate you and hope that you will find this a helpful resource for you as you continue to build a life that is a bit more resilient to autistic burnout.
Hey, everyone. You are listening to the Divergent Conversations podcast. We are two neurodivergent mental health professionals in a neurotypical world. I'm Patrick Cassell.
And I'm Dr. Neff.
And during these episodes, we do talk about sensitive subjects, mental health, and there are some conversations that can certainly feel a bit overwhelming. So we do just want to use that disclosure and disclaimer before jumping in. And thanks for listening.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Divergent Conversations. And we are now on episode 4 of the tagline that I have already forgotten.
Worn out and worthy.
Worn out and worthy.
Not your neurotypical wellness.
See, I've got the second part down, that the not your typical wellness makes a lot of sense. And the worn out and worthy wordplay, I can't get in my head, but it's a good one. And we are on episode 4, where we are going to talk community and connection, which I think is a really, really, really important topic.
Yeah, absolutely. And we kind of like, I feel like we started, I mean, we were going to talk about it last episode, and then it pivoted to digital consumption and digital space. But these things are so like interconnected. Because yeah, a lot of community for autistic ADHD people happens online, understandably.
Yeah. I mean, hell, without it, you and I would not be sitting here right now. It's amazing if I like really think about the last 5 years, you know, since the pandemic started, especially, of how many relationships I've built online. And I would guesstimate 80% of those people, maybe 85, I've never met in person.
And this can be like a sore spot for me when, and it typically never comes from autistic people, of like the distinction between like real community and internet community or online community or real friends. Like, I don't think many of us experience that way. Cause partly like if we think about real life community, if I go to a real life community event, I'm not going to be there in the sense that I'm going to be likely sensory overwhelmed.
Right.
So it's like my body's there, but like I'm not there. Yeah. And so, but with digital community, there is a sense of it is different than embodied connection. And I don't want to like downplay that, but there's more of me that's able to be present in that way.
For sure. Yeah. I think it feels a lot more accessible. Mm-hmm. And a lot more supportive in a lot of ways. And like, if I go into community for anything in person, it really, like you've mentioned this many, many times, like the Goldilocks scenario, mm-hmm. everything really has to be just right for it mm-hmm. to be enjoyable for me.
Yeah.
And even the littlest thing can really derail that very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I would agree 100%. And yeah, I think I spend a lot of, and I, you know, that's why I always am like, I want to be cautious whenever I recommend, like, spend less time online and spend less time on your phone, because it does feel like a catch 22 in a way of like, spend less time, but that's where a lot of the community connection comes from. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love how you say that. It is a double-edged sword. Yeah. And I also do notice, and this is why Belize was so powerful, is like, as so much of my life is online, there is kind of this weird kind of vortexness to it of, it's so weird to have this really big online life, and then I like literally rarely leave my house there, and where there is part of me that's like, I do crave embodied connection. And also that gets back to like autistic ADHD grief of, well, that's really hard for me. But there is some part of me that craves that. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you mentioned last episode that you've been enjoying being on social media more often recently. And I, as a friend and an observer, I've noticed that from you. And also just the realization of like, it sounds like you're enjoying it more because it's feeling more community centered and anchored into like having community, opposed to just like, yes, I'm sharing these resources, but this is obviously an extension of NDI and your business. And it almost feels like I have to share said resources every week on these days. More so like now you're like, you're really feeling more connected in certain aspects to some degree too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And partly it sparked off with a conversation with Callie, the Black Spectrum scholar on Instagram. It was so random. Oh, I know what it was. I think I saw a post. Oh, okay. I feel like this is going to sound like I'm like trying to like sound like I'm a good person, but my brain just went to context. Like, how did we get in a conversation? I think I saw a post about like how a lot of Black and Brown creators were like getting so many questions and just kind of overwhelmed with questions and the labor they were doing last week or 2 weeks ago during the Victor Perez. And that was kind of the headline of the week, which is a terrible thing, right? Oh my gosh, my brain's diverging too much. It's terrible when like death becomes like the headline of the week.
Sure.
Anyways, I reached out to them because I've appreciated their work in the past. And it's just like, is there anything like I can do for you this week? And I was also like, but there's also a demand in that. So then I went to their bio and I was like, oh, they've got like a give me a coffee. So I did that. And I was like, okay, just, I hope you like do something helpful for yourself while you have all this extra labor going on. And then that led to a conversation that like, I don't know how long we talked. It felt like an hour and I was so engrossed in it. And that's what I loved about early Instagram was like, I'd get into these conversations with really interesting people.
Right.
And so it was like, it was a person. It was literally, it was Callie. Like that was, and then I, and also just in hearing their perspective around creators and advocacy also was like, oh yeah, like I really need to be thinking less from a demand avoidance and more about like people have trust in me. And so how am I going to like show up in this moment? Anyways, that was a really long rabbit trail. But it was a person.
Yeah. And that feels probably a lot better and more reciprocal in relationship opposed to people who want things from you or expect things from you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like a genuine encounter and talking around ideas. And then we did like a conversation together, which I recorded and made reels around. So it's when it feels relational. But yeah, when it feels like more transactional, here's a resource, consume this.
Right.
Like, yeah, no.
Yeah, it's interesting. Because as my platform is growing, as do requests / demand messages, and I get so turned off by like, hey, will you share this for me? Hey, will you do this for me? Hey, will you show up to this thing? And I'm like, no, I don't want to do any of this. Like, so the relational side gets lost a lot when you are in the content creation space, especially when everything you post gets hundreds, if not thousands, of likes and responses. I don't know how you've done this for this long. And yeah, I know you've talked about how that also led to burnout. But yeah, I think right now, in this day and age, having community and connection and a place to anchor into and a place to feel safe and a place to feel seen and heard and affirmed is so damn important. And a place to send funny, dark humor memes and like all of the ways that you need to show up and feel seen and supported. So freaking important right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, I want to, because this question comes up a lot around like, okay, I hear neurodivergent community is important. And I talk about this all the time too, around like, I think this is one of the biggest things for supporting like neurodivergent identity, like integration, developing a positive identity, melting shame. But then the question like how? So like, I don't know if we should run through like a bullet list or if we want to talk about like our different experiences in different neurodivergent communities online. But I know in the back of my head is a voice of like, I want to make sure people feel resourced when they listen to this of like, okay, I do feel like I know how to like take a step toward community.
Yeah. I mean, whichever way your brain is currently putting that information out there, if it's list form or if it's about experiences, I'll default to you.
List form feels a little bit like too disconnected, but I also know sometimes that's more actionable or helpful. Let's start with experiences. How does that feel?
And we can also like link some resources in the show notes too.
Yeah. Well, I'm even thinking now, I'm like, shoot, there's a few communities I know of and the name's not on the tip of my tongue. And maybe we put together like a one page resource that goes with this of like, here's some communities, because there's some free ones, there's some paid ones, there's a lot of different options.
Yeah, for sure. So we can definitely do that, and we'll include that in the show notes as maybe just a link, and you can have access to that. Because this episode won't be out for 4 or 5 weeks anyway, from today. So yeah, experiences. I am such a reclusive person, despite maybe outward presentation a lot of the time. So my community, although I speak with a lot of people on a pretty consistent basis, or I message with a lot of people on a pretty consistent basis, I'm often at home in my house, sitting around with my dog, and I don't really leave very often unless it's like the just right situation, like you've mentioned before. I've learned that the last couple of years spending a lot of time in therapist Facebook groups has not been great for me and my mental health, and I've really like disengaged, including like pausing my own therapist Facebook group that I moderated for several years. So I've noticed like this lack of community and the desire to be a part of more connection and community and in neurodivergent spaces, especially. So I think my realization has come from that, and also just acknowledging like I wanna feel more plugged in places that I feel more authentically me.
I want to feel plugged in places you feel authentically me. Yeah. 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 I forgot about that you did pause that Facebook group and that.
Yeah. And March 24.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know you thought about it for a long time before you did, because, And that is, so I started on Facebook groups too, like when I first discovered, and there's a few like women and genderqueer Facebook groups, especially that was really helpful for me early on. And I don't know how much those groups have changed or not. But I do know that was a great place to like get resources, because it's a little more interactive than like Instagram in the sense you like to post a question and there's threads and responses. But that was something I eventually did move away from too, in the sense of like there was something about the energy. Okay, so I actually think this is interesting. I think it connects to the article that I recently wrote that we talked about a few episodes ago around identity development models for neurodivergent identity. I think some of those groups can be a lot of people in the immersion phase, which is when it's I'm first learning this about myself, and I'm accessing autistic pride, and it's really powerful. And this isn't a bad developmental phase to be in, right? We all need to do it, but it can, some of the temptations of that identity phase would be things like reverse othering, like the big bad neurotypical.
Right.
And that I noticed my nervous system like responds really strongly to othering and energy. And I don't think all Facebook groups would be like that. I'm not saying that. I just noticed for me, I took a step back away from those eventually as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's totally right. And that content that you created about the identity arc is really fascinating. And I found it to be like really spot on too, at least for my journey. And I noticed that in a lot of Facebook groups, there's a lot of like kind of, people joining in and like almost like ganging up on people for saying the wrong thing or using the wrong terminology or whatever. And threads just get out of control sometimes. And it's just too much energy for me to like be a part of. Because I think we all have to go through a learning and unlearning process, and
yeah,
feels a hell of a lot more supportive and safe when it's done from a place of like teaching and coming alongside opposed to like, how dare you say, you know, terminology
ASD.
Yeah.
On the spectrum. Yeah. That's so one of my first, so I thought a lot about the culture building when I built the Nook, which is about a year and a half old now. And the first video I made, and it's part of like the welcome sequence, is first of all, I actually say we are in a safe space. We're a brave space. And I talk about the importance of leaning into curiosity and kind of the similar idea of having compassion, like for wherever someone's at in their development in learning. So if someone's coming in saying ASD or on the spectrum, like not jumping to like you're doing something wrong or this means some character-based thing about you, like you're ableist, but like, can you have compassion for where they're at in their development? And and this is not like now it sounds, in addition to like subtly promoting Jane in our conversations, now it sounds like I'm trying to promote the Nook. I'm not, but like, I love the culture we've built there because there are people that come in and use that language. And I think there's just understanding of this is someone who maybe learned about their autism like a month ago.
Yeah.
And I want it to be like a gentle landing place for people. And I also say, like, if you're someone for whom being around that language is going to be really activating, like this might not be the best community for you.
Well, let's actually talk about what you've created from the perspective of community creation, because I think it's important in terms of a conversation about community and connection. Like, there's a reason that you created an online community. There's a reason that you've cultivated it the way that you have. So I think those things are important in terms of the greater scheme of this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I actually love talking about this stuff. It feels weird because then it's like, it feels like I'm like trying to promote the Nook. Weird stuff around promotion.
Yeah. But let's pause for a second.
Don't
you have like an extensive wait list and process of how to apply and how to get into this membership as well?
Not anymore. I did when it was opening, and I still because I want to keep the community culture what it is, like we do have a max number of new seats we open every month, but like we're not hitting that max regularly enough. We did when we first opened. Okay. Because that is part of it, is I want to keep the community culture. So I have an eye on, like, I don't want like 100 new people to enter in 1 month.
Sure.
That's going to have a big shift on culture. So community culture was huge for me. And I think it does go back to, I actually really love nerding out on this stuff. I love community building, and like, I've been reading a lot of books on belonging this year. So, okay. It actually goes back to my burnout. I burnt out on social media.
Yep.
And I was just making resources, but I was like, I feel alone in this. I feel like the only interaction the primary interaction I was getting with the neurodivergent community was exactly what you were describing, which is like, hey, can you post this thing? Hey, can you help me here? Hey, like, you're doing this thing wrong. I was getting grumpy. Like, I was getting grumpy toward the community that I love. And I was like, I need to figure out how to like heal my relationship to the community and have something that feels more connected and embodied and relational and complex and nuanced. And I was struggling to access that on social media.
Right.
So part of me staying sustainable in this space was like, I need like a relational field where I can go deeper with people and where we can have more complex conversations. So yeah, that's when I built the Nook. I already had a resource membership where people could get all the resources on like a monthly subscription. So then I really like Circle. That's the platform I use. It's not social media. It has a similar build in that there's forums and then there's just a lot you can do with it. And so built it on Circle. It's actually like, I'm proud, not of me, but I'm proud of the Nook. It's one of the top performing communities on Circle, which speaks to how like active people are. That's part of the analytics they use to measure that.
Yeah.
And then I thought a lot about culture and how do we build a space that is supportive and nuanced, and a lot of it's been trial and error as things have come up. And there is a connection too of like, okay, having some live events and then forum based, because it's also thinking through, I think with neurodivergent community, we're going to have different ways of accessing information. Some people will do really well with text. Some right. people won't. So having kind of live sessions is going to be more impactful. So there's a lot. I'm not doing it perfectly. When we think about building neuro-inclusive spaces, there's so much to consider. And I've certainly like stepped in it. I've had my errors. I'm still learning. I've got an amazing, Stephanie is we call her the Nook Keeper. She works like full time for NDI now. And so she's doing, that's been also helpful just to have a person whose like job is dedicated to thinking through these things. So I don't know, that was a really long ramble, but there's a lot of things I think about when I think about community and like, how do we create spaces of belonging?
Yeah, I love that. And I think that speaks volumes, you know, about what you've created and what you're trying to create. And we need more spaces like that, regardless of you know, if it's your space or other spaces. And I think people just need those landing spots and some guidance and some safety and that protective factor too. And I know you feel really protective of the participants and the culture. And I think that speaks volumes about what you've created. So, and I imagine people get so much out of that environment too. You know, like, I imagine that it's really something that people really look forward to participating in and being a part of.
I think many do. I think it ebbs and flows. I think there'd be some people who probably sign up and they don't. Like, it's like, oh, this is actually like hard to engage in. And then the people who like lean in, yeah, they get a lot out of it. And they say that, and like, they are able to say like, I'm so thankful for this community when hard things happen. But I mean, that's the thing with community too, is it's partly how much we invest of ourselves.
Yep.
So it's having people that create the containers for community. And then it's, as we come into community, how much we invest as well is a big
100%.
And that's scary for a lot of us, because RSD and like having bad past relational experiences, especially with community.
Yeah. I, you know, the retreats that I host are not the same, obviously, as an online community, but I've experienced a lot of that too, where there's a lot of intentionality in curating and wanting it to be a certain way. But certainly people who come to my events with the best of intentions don't participate for whatever reason. And then I get bad reviews of like, hey, you know, this wasn't for me and I didn't feel included. And that's always hard to take. But the reason I bring that up is because during my event, you said to me that you think I'm a community connector. And I think that too. And that's why I'm thinking about community right now, about how I show up in community and how I think that a strength of mine is connecting people in community. One thing that I've mentioned to you off air is like, I often feel excluded from connection and community for whatever reason. And I think that feels, it's fascinating to me to be like, man, I am a really good community connector and I'm not connected in many communities. Like, and some of that is certainly me. Like, that's just me being like, I don't want to at times, but there's so much of me that also like feels like excluded a lot of the time. And I think that is a weird mental space to be in sometimes.
It is a weird tension that you hold. And yeah. I don't think you're alone in that, in the sense that I think one adaptation to like, you know, reciprocity and groups being hard for us is we can become really good frame builders of like, I can host this conversation. I can host this community. I can be the architect behind it.
Right.
And that's how I like feel safety and structure. But then being in it like that, there's a different vulnerability. There's a different almost like, I don't want to say skill set, but kind of like the fluidity of getting into the conversation.
And we talked a little bit before we started recording today about like having guests on in the future and some struggles that we have both had and experienced, but the fluidity is hard for me. I think that's, that's one of the hardest pieces of having guests on with three people is like the fluidity, knowing where to insert, knowing where to, when to speak, that whole like social dynamic dance that we often do. And oftentimes just defaulting to just like zoning out, dissociating and like not really participating much.
No, same. I mean, we both of us, like, it'd be interesting if there's like a little energy bar. Like energy expenditure when we record and it's just us versus a guest. Like, it would be a lot. It'd be a big difference.
Yeah, totally. So I can, if we take that on that small scale and put it into like a community perspective, it's quite hard for me in those situations. Like, even when I go out socially with like groups of friends of like, you know, a couple of people, I find myself in that space where I'm like, I know all these people really well. I would consider them like my good close friends. And I also really struggle to feel like inserted or a part of, even despite like existing physically there. It's really hard for me to access that.
I hard relate to that.
And I think that's what's prevented me. People have asked me, have you ever gone on a retreat despite hosting them? I'm like, no. And I don't know if I really want to, because I do have that fear. And it's not just from the social piece of like fearfulness. It's really energetically and physiologically where I just don't feel comfortable having to participate. But I feel a lot more comfortable, as you mentioned, like as the architect or facilitator.
What is your experience? Because I'm trying to like, I am curious, because this, and this is such a classic, especially autistic thing, where groups are hard because of processing. And what is it like for you in digital space where it's async? So there's like synchronous communication, which is what we're doing right now. It's live time, or like a Zoom meeting would be synchronous. And then there's async, where it's like someone leaves a comment, someone comes back and responds later. How do you deal with like async group digital communication conversation?
If I'm thinking about like the Facebook group that I used to moderate, I was really engaged in it at first and I felt really connected to it at first. And then I think as my platform grew, I burnt myself out by being a part of, and I started to resent and become frustrated and irritated. Similarly to what you're kind of describing in some capacity, as your platform also grew, but like I started to get frustrated and irritated with the people who are essentially paying my bills, right? Like And I was like, oh, I'm burnt out. Like, if I'm feeling this way about people who are supporting me, then this is a big sign of burnout. But at first, like, I felt really energized by it, and I felt really engaged in it and really enjoyed being a part of those conversations and discussions, to the point then where it was just like, oh, this feels like cumbersome or burdensome or irritating and heavy, and I don't feel like dealing with this anymore. So in those moments, I've always, it's kind of in a seesaw in a way. Seesaw? Yeah.
Well, and I think partly, and maybe this is like, hopefully this is different for people who are experiencing the community, where there's probably, I think there's less, hopefully there's more permission to be like, I can be in and out, I can ebb and flow. Yeah. Whereas if you're the architect of the community, there's some like expectation to like be in more consistently. Yeah. And so maybe part of it is like bumping into a true capacity limit of, yeah, when the community is this size. So that, I think that is actually part of it. And is size becomes a part of the experience of community, and right. that there are things that are easier to embody in a smaller scale that become a lot harder. And that's why, like, Facebook groups, I love them in the sense that that's the first access point to so many autistic people. Yep. And so that's fulfilling a very important need. And many of them are quite big, and that there is just limited in what we can do when a community right. gets a certain size. And so that is yeah. part of, that is part of thinking about community architecture is the size of the thing.
Totally. Yeah. Cause if I could think back when I started All Things Private Practice in 2020 ish, probably had like 100-200 members in it, right? At first. And a lot of them were people I knew in one way or another. So a lot of the conversation was like, it's very engaging with people that you kind of had relationships with. As it grows to 15,000, the people you know become less and less. Mm-hmm. The people who are responding consistently become fewer and fewer. Mm-hmm. And then things take over your mm-hmm. news cycle.
And then there's also, when it's bigger, there's more, this is one of those words I can't say, like,
Anonymity.
Like, where you feel like if you're in a group of 15,000,
yeah,
there's less attachment to the group,
yep,
and a more sense of like, I think, anonymous. Whereas, so in a smaller community, so like the Nook, we're in the community portion, we're about 300 right now, and I don't think I ever want to go beyond 500. I'm not going to hold a strong line on that, but that's kind of the sense I have.
Sure,
where it's, you feel more attachment to the community. Yep. First of all, there is, and as like capitalistic as this sounds, there is something psychologically about when you invest in community, whether it's through payment or through another yep. means, like you're more invested yep. in the community culture.
For sure.
But because it's smaller, it's also like, you can't just like post something and then not think about like the relational impact that might have
or right.
impact on totally. Culture. Like, so yeah. Size and then culture also influenced.
Totally. Totally. And it's a reason I've seen a lot of people, and this is a point of contention for a lot of people, take free Facebook groups offline to mm-hmm. be like, okay, let's have more curation and intention setting. Because when it's a free Facebook group and anyone can join through like three membership questions, you never know what's going to happen. And it's a lot harder to create and maintain culture and evolve mm-hmm. culture. And it's mm-hmm. very easy for culture to be fractured.
Yeah.
So that's always something that's been on my mind. Mm-hmm. Switching gears a little bit, still thinking about community connection. One thing for me that we've talked about on here, and for a lot of autistic people who are listening probably can relate to, is parallel play being a big source of community mm-hmm. connection. For me, playing soccer all my life was community connection, but also parallel play. And I didn't have to show up any sort of way with any mm-hmm. social expectation, you know, and there might be 90 minute games that I've played in my life where I've said three words, but you're still mm-hmm. in community connection with your team mm-hmm. and still having that like symbiotic relationship of that energetic like experience.
I love that you brought that up. I didn't do sports for as long as you did, but I did sports growing up. And that was, I think, so protective for me because it was a social connection. And I would see the basketball team, like, they'd get deeper into the friendships than I ever would, yeah. but I felt connected to something bigger than me, and I felt a part of it, and it was parallel play. And yeah, sports can be such a, yeah, because it both, that is part of community, is it gives us a sense of we're connected to something bigger than us. And then the parallel play piece is huge.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. And you were mentioning meaning making yesterday. I think there's meaning making when you're a part of something and you're all working towards something, mm-hmm. whether or not you take it very seriously. Like when my wife said, let's play intramural kickball. And then she volunteered to not play every time we had too many women. And I'm the one who's like, we need to freaking win. So like there is meaning making though, like when you're all committed to a thing. And for me, like growing up playing at a higher level in competitive like soccer growing up, there was always meaning making of like, what kind of season is this going to be? Are we going to like move towards playoffs and championships and like all working together towards that goal? And there's also like grief in experience too, mm-hmm. but you are doing it as a community and you're doing it as a team. Mm-hmm. And for me, that always felt like the safest place to just be myself was mm-hmm. in those experiences.
Absolutely. And that feels so generative to me. Like I'm noticing energy in my body increase as soon as you talked about like meaning making and moving towards something. And I think back to everything we've been talking about in this season, that's what we need right now as a community is like communities for connection, yes, but also I think so many of us have all of this pent up energy around what's happening of like community where it's like we are pushing the needle forward on goodness in the world.
Yep.
And to feel like we're part of something that's contributing. There's so much shit in the world right now. And it's like to be a part of something that's contributing to goodness. Like that is, I know that's what I need in my life. Like that's what I'm trying to prioritize. I think that's what so many people need in their lives right now.
Yeah, no, 100%. I agree wholeheartedly. Like we are pushing the needle forward for goodness. And I think that we want to feel invested in that stuff as humans for the most part. I can't even generalize anymore because of certain shit that's happening in the world. But I feel like for the mm-hmm. most part, most people want that in some capacity, mm-hmm. form or fashion. And to feel a part of, like to feel a part of a movement, to feel a part of collective, to feel a part of like, we're in this together. And I think that's also advocacy in its truest form, right? Is like mm-hmm. grassroots advocacy, being a part of the community, the connection. You can talk about like community from the perspective of someone who lived through Hurricane Helene / devastation destruction. Like community was born here in Western North Carolina out of something really terrible, out of a catastrophic event that has negatively impacted the community, has also grown the community. So it's really fascinating how that's taken place. You know, like I kind of mentioned here at one point in time, people on my street, regardless of who they are, what they believe in, where they mm-hmm. stand on things. During that time in history, in this moment in Appalachia, we're checking on each other. We're mm-hmm. lending resources to one another. We're sharing ideas. We're sharing information. We're supporting, checking in on like the most vulnerable of the people who live in this section of my town. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was just really, although there was a lot of sadness and grief, it's also really beautiful to watch and witness mm-hmm. experience as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, right, that idea of like those life moments that break us open, like those can be shattering moments. They can also be some of the most generative moments and they can be both. Right. I had a like idea baby when you were talking of like, so we talk about like PTSD post traumatic stress disorder. And then there's also literature around post-traumatic growth and how sometimes after a trauma is when those like life moments where it takes us on a different trajectory. Okay. I feel like what you're describing in Asheville is like collective post-traumatic growth.
Yep.
And that we are in a trauma right now in an autistic community and different traumas. And it's, I think that's part of the question is how do we lean into like post-traumatic growth as a community. And this is where, like, I know I mentioned Adrienne Marine Brown's work a few episodes ago, Emergent Strategy, and she talks about transformation justice so beautifully. This is where I think Black and Brown advocacy has often been more connected to humanity. And like, how do we learn from some of those movements and how we move through this in in the autistic space toward post-traumatic growth, toward something new, toward something generative, toward connection, toward community.
Yeah, absolutely. One part that, you know, that I've noticed too is like post RFK commentary, seeing a lot of the bigger autism societies and organizations that sometimes get a really bad rap and sometimes for good reason, kind of standing together to like make cohesive statements. And I was like, oh, sometimes like the true horrors of the world really do create cohesion in terms of like taking a stand on certain things. So it's really fascinating how community can be born out of some of this scarier stuff that we experience as human beings.
Well, and also I think it puts things in perspective of like, okay, we're fighting over puzzle pieces. Like,
yeah.
I think, and so it can put, and this actually reminds me of Carissa's episode that we had where we, I love how she put some of this like political stuff into a psychoanalytic frame of there is something about when we have like one kind of one evil force that we're like, or scapegoat that we're all channeling around, there's something uniting about that. Like, so if it the RFK and like everything that's happening there, it's bringing light to the fact of like, we can put away our differences to address this like much bigger, badder, scarier thing. So there's something about perspective even. And I'm not saying that that dynamic's always a good dynamic, but it's just, it's one that tends to happen.
Right.
There's can be unity around a force that is negative.
Yeah, like the Saurons of the world, as I look around all my Lord of the Rings stuff in my office, or any sort of figure or messaging that feels like dark, evil, harmful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it, yeah. Yeah. And this is something I feel like I've referenced this so many times. I should put this conversation in our show notes, but Callie, again, Black Spectrum Scholar, talked about cognitive inflexibility and how sometimes like surface level, it's easy to talk about autistic community. Also, I'm noticing we're talking about autism more than everything that's happening in the world. Of course, we're talking about autism world more. Autism
but I feel like we say that so often on this podcast and we're always like, are talking about autism more than ADHD.
I know. Sorry, ADHD. We love you too. Yeah. Actually, no, yeah. I sometimes hate you, but I'm working to love you more. And I'm talking to my ADHD.
Yeah.
Cognitive inflexibility. So it's really tempting to come into autistic culture and spaces and be like, oh my gosh, I found my people and like we all get along. And it's like, no, actually cognitive inflexibility is a thing. And so we can fracture easily. And I think when we do, there can be more injury around that because it's like, I found my people, but now we're fracturing.
Right.
So fractures do happen in our community and it hurts when it does.
Absolutely. And I think it can also lead to a narrative of, see, this is why I can never find my people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It can lead to those types of wounds too and narratives as well.
Yeah. Like I thought I found my people. I thought I found my tribe and here I'm hurt again. Which goes back to rupture and repair. You cannot be, if you are in relationship long enough, there will be rupture.
Absolutely. I mean, been married 11 years. I'm trying to think of how many ruptures there have been in that 11 year period. But the desire to repair is important too in community. I think if you're, you know, acknowledging that there will in fact be rupture, then there has to somehow be desire to repair, provided that you both mutually want to have repair.
Mm-hmm.
Not if it's egregious, like that's a different story.
Right.
But yeah, so I think that's important too. And it's interesting how I'm talking in a different tone and my Shih Tzu just picked up his head to look at me like, you okay? It's interesting how sometimes certain things bring us together. Certain conversations start to create unity in some senses. And I think we're going to see that more and more. Like those of us in this country and part of the world who are more vulnerable, you're going to see more unity around. You're going to see more protectiveness around, but you're also going to see more injury and more pain and suffering too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. The porcupines. I shared this in an essay And this to me has just like been a powerful metaphor for my own like struggles with connection and intimacy and community, but I also think could be a metaphor for the autistic community in this moment. So there's this metaphor, the porcupine dilemma. And it's the idea that like porcupines at night, what they'll do is they'll like come close together for warmth when it's like cold at night, but then they'll start to poke each other and that hurts. So then they have to separate. And how this is kind of the human condition is this dance of, I need warmth. Oh wait, that spike hurts. And I need distance. And right. I think especially when you're autistic, like just from a embodied, there's like, oh, that's a sensory spike. But then there's also just like, ooh, that's a relational spike. And so we're often doing that dance of like coming together and then distance. And there's rupture and repair as part of that dance.
Yeah, for sure. It's well said. Actually like that imagery. I always look so cute at the zoo or preserves, but yeah. Hedgehogs too, also my jam. But I also feel like those are the types of animals that will stab the shit out of you.
Okay, I can tell your brain is going to wrap up, and I do feel like we've been talking a while.
Yeah.
Did I read that right? Okay.
Yeah, you did.
There was a couple communities I wanted to highlight, partly because, I've mentioned the Nook, and I think, and there's other, I'm sure, I don't actually know them, but I'm sure there's other like autistic ADHD communities out there, but there's two that I know of that are free, and I wanted to mention that because I know like paid community is not accessible to everyone. Mm-hmm. So as far as I know, Autastic, and it's been a few years since I connected with their creator, but as far as I know, I believe this is a free community. There's like things that you could pay into more, and it's got a big BIPOC focus. And so that's one community out there that I wanted to highlight. And then the other one, which I'm going to be involved with, and it sounds like Divergent Conversations might be involved with, that I'm really excited about, is the NeuroKindness community. My friend Nick and then several folks that he's partnering with that he met, I think through Substack, is starting this, and it's also going to be on Circle, so similar platform to the Nook. And the whole vision of this is it's slightly different than a nonprofit. It's like all the profits that are made go back into the community, and it's they're going to have kind of what they're calling storytellers, so people who can share wisdom that are first invited into the community, who can be resources for the community, and then members are invited. But the whole idea is like, can we build something that's different than the capitalistic world we're seeing, where you come in to community, we take care of each other. It's free, like it's, but there is kind of this community energy around it. And I think, we've talked about maybe we'll be involved in kind of supporting that project in some way. But to me, like when I met Nick and then heard about this community, I was like, this is transformational justice. This is what I want to be seen more of. And that is opening this summer. So probably around the time that this releases. And again, I think we will have a PDF with some of these resources, but I just want people to know who are maybe looking for something smaller than the Facebook groups, but who like, well, I can't access paid community right now, that there are some options out there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great resource.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have any itchy thoughts?
Nope. I've gone back to my brain just existing and
you've gone back to your brain just existing. Yeah. That's where you're at. We've been recording for like, we've been on this call for an hour and 50 minutes. This is the end of our second recording. I think we're hitting our like, okay, this is our capacity point.
Yep.
So I'll do the like.
Yeah, do it.
So if you like us, it's always so personal with me. It's like, if you like us, if you are a fan of our work, one way that you can show us your support is by liking and subscribing and downloading and doing all that nice thing. And we're on a few platforms like Instagram and YouTube and wherever podcasts.
Top notch. Top notch. Or what is the series called again? I think it was
Worthy. worthy
worn
than that.
Out and worthy.
Worn out and worthy.
Not your typical wellness. I keep thinking it's worn out and worthless. That's where my mind is going.
Patrick, that's your depressed mind talking.
What is that saying?
It's saying you're depressed and you're aware of it.
Sure.
So you are not worn out and worthless as much as your depressed mind might tell you that. You are worn out and worthy. And sometimes you need community to help remind you of the fact you're worthy.
True story.
And sometimes you need a really awkward podcast co-host to end things to make you laugh. Oh, also, I think we have a Substack now. So there's also the Substack.
Yeah, that too.
So if you have not had enough Patrick and Megan Anna in your life, which I like, you're weird if that's your experience of this conversation. Who'd be like weird?
That's what we want is that weirdness.
We want weirdness.
We'll have all this in the show notes so that if you are listening and you're just like either laughing with us or you are laughing at us, you have access to all of those resources too.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.